Dan Borvin is back in the studio. Just did a wrap up and some post reflections on the discussion that took place here with Doug and Jared. Appreciate your thoughts. I hope those who watch will go back and listen to that one. I think there are really good reflections there that are hopefully healthy for people to consider. But now,
Something completely different.
Dan said you should do something light, something happy. We thought about pastoral bloopers, but you know the hard part is I've made so many I can't even remember. Yeah.
I try to block them out of my memory.
Yeah,
I'm sure my congregation could have a whole list of pastoral bloopers.
Well, let's just see where this goes. let's just try for a little bit, and we'll see if we can come up with some bloopers. I think people don't realize this about ministry, you know, and pastors. We have quirks. We have. It's tough to be in front of the public eye all the time. I mean, believe it or not, I actually want to be away from all that. you wouldn't think about it with the podcast, but it's tough being always on.
Well, I don't know how you are, but because I do so much public speaking, I try to minimize my private speaking. When I'm not in front of people, I much prefer for other people to talk. I don't like to be the center of attention. When we're in some kind of social gathering, I'm not the guy holding court.
Yeah.
I like to be a wallflower.
Yeah.
Because there's so much when I'm not a wallflower, when I'm not before the congregation, I just want to recede into the background. Yeah. Let other people talk. I have no problem with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we can talk about a few bloopers here. I can start. I have a few in my head. This is supposed to be a lighter program. So where to begin with pastoral bloopers? Yeah, you know, I remember when I was first starting pastoral ministry, I remember how scared I was to speak. You know, today we've just gotten used to it. But I do remember the first time I watched an intern preach, and he was preaching, and he was grabbing the water and the coaster stuck to the water.
Oh, that's a good one.
And he's shaking as he brings it up, and the coaster goes boom off the pulpit all the way down. And he was absolutely devastated. So, you know, I think that's just difficult for people. You know, we have a great congregation that's really, since we have a lot of interns here who are compassionate to interns, but it is really hard to stand up and proclaim. And people don't realize how difficult preaching is itself. Like it is tough business to do this well.
It's tough business preparing sermons. It's tough business being in the pulpit.
Yeah.
And it's extraordinarily difficult to communicate what you're trying to communicate, what you intend to communicate. And then there are all the mechanics of it.
Yeah.
How do I stand? When I reach for a drink of water, is the coaster going to be attached to it? Things you're not thinking about because you're trying to think about what you're saying. And there are all these other things that come into play that we don't think about and often we don't have control over.
Yeah. Like I remember my wife, when we first came to Escondido, somebody said to me, you sure you want to go to Escondido and take that call with all those professors there? And so like the first few weeks of me coming back to Escondido after my call on Linden, my wife said to me, you've got to stop looking at Bob Godfrey while you're preaching. You're doing it like all the time. And I was like, yeah, I guess I'm looking for approval. Give me an amen,
if
Bob.
If he nods, I'm good.
So I've got over that. I got over the fear of man on that regard. But
well, you should still have the fear of Dr. Godfrey. That's healthy. Looking for his approval is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There was another time when you talk about getting things right. I was preaching on the Ethiopian eunuch. And I don't know what I said, but I was talking about castration. I got it all wrong. Like, I don't remember exactly what was said, but a farmer comes up afterwards and says, Pastor, we need to talk. Like, do you know the imagery you just painted in the whole congregation? The guy, that poor guy, I don't even think he can use the restroom after you were done preaching. I was devastated. Like, I was totally devastated. I was like, what did I say? you know, what did I could never go back and listen to it because I just couldn't handle it. Like, I don't know what I said.
Well, going back to the intern with the water thing, one thing I tell interns is if you can, keep moving. If you make a faux pas in the pulpit, don't draw attention to it, because most of the time the congregation is not going to even recognize it.
Yeah.
Or they certainly won't remember it. Mm-hmm. But if you draw attention to it, they're going to remember it.
Yeah.
There's a, when I went to Moody Bible Institute, and for which I'm forgiven now as a Reformed guy, but I went to Moody Bible Institute, and there was a local pastor came in and did chapel. And I only remember one thing he said in his sermon. I could not tell you the passage, could not tell you anything else he said. But he was using an example. And he said, if you go down to City Hall, he did not say city. He said another word that's really close to city that I will not say on your podcast, lest you get a TV-14 label. I don't want this to be on the R-rated section of YouTube. He said something. He didn't say City Hall. And he stopped and drew attention to it and laughed and said, I didn't mean to say that, whatever. He addressed it. He was done. At that moment, he had totally lost the whole chapel. The crowd broke out in laughter. Nobody knew anything he said after that. He was done.
Yeah.
Because he drew attention to it. I've made verbal faux pas a million times.
Yeah.
And I keep going. If you draw attention to it, it's over. People will camp there and only remember that thing. So keep going. I've said all kinds of unfortunate things in the pulpit that I didn't mean to say, but I don't draw attention to them and nobody remembers afterward. So for those who are just beginning in public speaking, if you can keep going, keep going.
Yeah, right.
Now, if you can't, if it is so egregious, maybe dropping the coaster was something to address, you have to address it in a lighthearted way and not get flustered. You have to show the congregation that you have command of the situation. And it's not an ego thing. It's not about me. It's about me in this office. That you can trust me in this office.
Right.
You can trust me behind that pulpit. And even if I make a silly mistake, I'm so in command in the moment that I can just let that mistake roll off my back. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to wreck the rest of the sermon. So in those cases, I would say address it in a lighthearted way and keep moving. Mm-hmm. When I candidated at my current church in Anaheim, I had, in God's providence, I had the worst cold of my life. And this was like in, this was in May. It wasn't even winter. Not that we have real winters here in California. Me from Chicago, I can't complain. So I get in, I have a coughing fit in the middle of my candidating sermon. I can't stop coughing. And I'd had coughs prior to this, you know, in the sermon and just tried to keep rolling.
Yeah.
But then I get a coughing fit, and it felt like it was 10 minutes. It was probably 45 seconds. But, you know, when you're up there, every second feels like an hour. And it was so bad, an elder comes up and hands me a cough drop in the midst of my coughing fit. And I don't remember what I said, but I had to just laugh it off.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if I had, you know, if I get nervous and get flustered and start sweating, then it gets way worse. Mm-hmm. And not because the people are going to be upset or offended. Like, who is this guy? He can't even control himself. It's because it's their concern. That's what you don't want. Because now they're thinking about you and they're concerned about you. They're not thinking about the sermon. So you don't want them, oh, is he okay? Will he be all right? Should he stop the sermon? That's the last thing you want. You want them thinking about the text. You want them thinking about Christ, about the gospel, not about your throat. So in those cases, you have to just kind of laugh it off and keep moving.
Yeah, I haven't always done that well. I've had nothing but in my ministry, mic problems. Mic problems have been just awful to deal with. And I remember a particular circumstance in Linden when I was preaching. We were right at the start of the service, right at the beginning of the message. And the mic cuts out. And in that building, it was terrible. Like, you could hear nothing. So, you know, it comes back on, cuts out again. This goes on like two or three times. And then the the mic guy walks up to the pulpit and he changes out the batteries and I start preaching again. It cuts out again. I was so worked up.
Yeah.
I said, this is the most talked about sermon in Linden. Everyone up. The Lord bless you and keep you.
Wow. You cut it off.
I cut it off. I gave the benediction and walked straight out.
Wow. Would you do that again?
Not the way to handle
it. No.
Not. I was. Yeah. It was the worst moment, but I could not function after it.
Right.
Like I was so worked up. So I'm in my study just falling apart. The elder comes back. You got to get back out there.
Wow.
You get back out there. I said, I am not until you fix that stupid thing. Like I was so worked up. It was.
But you can't do that again. If you had to do it again, wait, make a joke.
No,
you know, this mic is possessed by demons.
Yeah. They had a lot.
We got to move.
Yeah. They had a lot of time for coffee and cookies after.
Yeah. And then you just, I've had that happen. Mic problems.
Yeah.
And you just take off the mic and use your voice.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what preachers did for.
Yeah, I know. We're so
up until 100 years ago or whatever. Why can we not go without a microphone?
I think I was so ready to preach that sermon. Yeah. I was so worked up and everything was failing. This went on for like 5 or 6 minutes. And so I was like, I can't do it. I fell apart. So that was one of the worst. That's never happened since. That's one time in 20 years of ministry. But that was when I was first starting. So.
No, I had the opposite of mic problems. When I was a seminary student preaching in Washington, D.C. And this is probably 2010, somewhere in there. Washington, D.C., the first week of August. The temperature was like 95. The humidity, I don't know what the level was. It was choking. It was like being inside of a mouth walking outside. The humidity was horrific. And the church at the time, the URC in DC, met at a Swedenborgian congregation. I never heard of Swedenborgianism. This weird, strange sect of Christianity, I think early 20th century. Anyway, so they're renting this building. The building's made of stone. No drywall in there. It's all stone. Because it's made of stone, it had no air conditioning. Where are you going to put the vents? Yeah. Chisel through the stone?
Yeah.
No air conditioning. First week of August, 95 degrees. I was in a flop sweat before I did the call to worship. It was horrific. Pouring down my face. Because they didn't have air conditioning, they had to have fans. So they have these industrial fans around the back of the congregation that are so loud, you couldn't hear yourself think. These fans, woo, 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 the whole time. And because of the fans and the stone, you can't use a microphone because the echo, the sound bounces off the stone. It's impossible. So just your human voice, no microphone, 95 degrees, fans going at 100 decibels, and I'm in a flop sweat. I'm trying to preach and you have to shout over the fans. So I'm going, you know, Jesus loves you. God wants to comfort you with the gospel. Well, you can't really comfort people shouting at them. It was horrific.
Yeah.
But I survived.
You survived.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, there's a whole variety of things that could happen, you know, up there. And I think you're right. I think we have to press on and continue to.
Here's another one. So I'm getting ready to do a baptism. Foolishly, I did not check the font before the service.
So that shouldn't have been your job.
Shouldn't have been, but I should have covered all the bases. Family comes up. I read the form. All is well. Take the baby. Go to the font.
Dry baptism.
No water. I look in the font, bone dry.
Yeah.
What do I do?
Yeah.
I said, there's no water in here.
That's when you start explaining the whole meaning of baptism.
Yeah.
And try to filibuster.
So instead of panicking, I'm sitting there talking to the baby. The deacons are freaking out. They were panicked. They went and got some water as fast as they could, heated it up so the baby's not freezing to death with cold water from the tap. But I'm talking to the baby, just trying to laugh it off, communicating to the congregation, this is not a huge deal. This is not something to panic about. We'll just roll with it. Had I gotten angry, I can't believe there's no water in here, it would have wrecked the whole thing.
Yep.
no one would have remembered the baptism. They would have remembered me getting angry over the lack of water. It would have been a disaster.
Right.
You have to let those things roll off your back.
You do. You've got to let them roll off. It's tough to do.
It's not easy. I was angry. Externally, I tried to play it cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's the faux pas and the mistakes with the people themselves. And I remember I first got to Linden, my first charge. And whenever anyone says anything to you at the door, I never learned this. You think you'll remember it. You don't remember it. Like, you just don't.
Nope.
And so, you know, one of the real pieces of advice to young men is have a little notepad or something. You can just write down what you promised to do.
I keep my Bible with me at the door, and I keep a piece of paper in to write it down.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. So this sweet couple comes up and says, hey, next Sunday, you want to come for dinner? I said, sure. Great. We'd love to come get to know you. Well, we'll invite a whole bunch of people in the congregation to get to know you. And so it comes. I totally forget. This is kind of a Chris Gordon thing, but totally forget. So the next Sunday at the door, this older couple comes up. You want to come for lunch? I said, sure. We'll be there. So I go home, and the first person from the previous week calls, says, are you coming? We're all waiting for you at the table. Says, I will be there in 5 minutes. I went to the other person's house.
Oh,
that was a big blunder.
You didn't try to do the, I mean, that's a sitcom episode right there. You try to go to both back and forth.
Two meals.
Yeah. Oh, I'll be right back. And then you drive to the other house.
I felt so bad. I felt they probably thought, well, who did we just bring on as the pastor? You know, but these are the kind of things that I think our people have to be patient with us about.
We are human with feet of clay.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And I promised my congregation when I came there, I will fail you in 1,000 ways. Mm-hmm. Please be forgiving.
Right.
It will happen.
Right. And I think, you know, you do have to get tough skin in this. Not talking so much about the bloopers and failures now, but, you know.
But just to address that.
Yeah.
People are forgiving.
They are.
Some of them aren't.
Right.
But most of the people will be so forgiving. It's more in our own head than it is in the concrete. Oh, I made this mistake. And we get up in our own head. The people will love you. They'll recognize you're human. They will let it go. They'll be forgiving. So we can't think that what we're thinking is what the congregation is thinking.
Right.
Because they're more forgiving of us than we are of ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, getting to a little bit to help maybe those listening to understand your pastor a little more, you know, it is, you're preaching difficult truths, hard truths. These things deeply affect you. How many, you know, I don't think what people understand is, you know, Sunday's this up day and then Monday's this low day. And Mondays are really hard for pastors because, you know, you're beating your, this is what I do. You're beating yourself up for everything you should have said and everything you said wrong. Those are the things you kind of focus on. You shouldn't. You should trust the Lord, but it is a spiritually low day after delivering these things to God's people. And, you know, we have to trust that the Lord works through. It's like one of the old ministries used to say, which I love the line, God uses a crooked stick to strike a straight blow.
Yeah.
And we are indeed crooked sticks. And
so, yeah, just advice to the congregation. Mm-hmm. If you do have something to address with your pastor, Monday's probably not the day to do it.
Or at the door. On the way out?
No.
I had to tell numerous people, call me Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know, it's early on. Because you can't take it in.
You're not of your right mind.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No. And even like discourse afterward. I don't think people understand how difficult that is.
Right.
Some people are better at it. But, you know, your mind is so engaged in this. And you're out talking. And generally, not too many people are talking about the sermon after. Right. So, you know, it's for me at least, it's a challenge for me to stay totally focused after I preach. That's why a lot of pastors disappear, but I don't think that's good either.
Well, I do what some might think is a foolish thing. After our second service, I take questions and answers, which
like you sit up on the front. And
so in our second service, I preach, we sing a second psalm, benediction. The service is over, and I tell people, if you need to leave, that's perfectly fine. This is extra. This is not part of the service. Benediction has been pronounced. But then we do, usually it's about 15 minutes of question and answers, at max 15 minutes. And sometimes my brain is shot and people will ask me some technical theological question. And I have to say, you know what? I can't answer that right now.
Right.
Because I preached two sermons, had conversations with people. I am not in the right place to address this heavy issue.
Right. Right. No, that's exactly right. I mean, it is a real toll on your mind after you preach. It's,
I read years ago, I don't know if it's true, in a Billy Graham book, he said someone hooked up various people of various professions to like stress monitors. One was a airline pilot in landing a plane under difficult conditions. I think one was an ER doc, and then they hooked him up to it. And the stress levels of preaching a sermon were higher than the doctor and the airline pilot. Mm-hmm. Who knows if that's true scientifically, but certainly we could believe it being true. Having done it, people don't recognize the physical stress, but what you can't measure scientifically is the spiritual stress. Mm-hmm. You can't hook that up to a gauge. There's all kinds of spiritual warfare happening on the Lord's Day in the pulpit. So the level of drain and exhaustion after a sermon is great. So be very long-suffering with your pastor on Sundays and Mondays.
Right. Yeah, if you have a pastor who's laboring hard to rightly divide the word of truth, to preach the gospel to you, who's faithful in that, I don't say this in any sort of way to whatever. I think it's important that the people know he needs encouragement in that, you know, like, and it's not one of those things where you constantly have to feed, build up your pastor in the sense that, you know, you're trying to give him a big head, but he does need positive feedback. He does need encouragement. That is something that I think, and I think in general, God's people have been really good at that. For me, I've been very thankful for God's people and the encouragement that they give.
Yeah. Likewise.
Yeah. What else? What else in pastoral ministry? Got a few more minutes here.
Well, so I've had a million of those verbal faux pas usually in the liturgy more so than in the sermon. Not long ago, in our church, we read the prayer of the corporate prayer of confession together as a congregation. And then we have a moment of silent prayer, usually about a minute. And then I read the prayer of confession and close that section out. So not long ago, it was the day we were having a baptism. And I was thinking about the baptism, which was coming soon in the liturgy. So I'm thinking about the mechanics of the baptism, and I'm not thinking about the prayer. So we have the time of silent prayer, and I start reading the corporate prayer that we just read as a congregation. And after about a sentence, I recognize what I'm doing. So then I'm thinking, how do I get out of this? Do I just read the whole thing again? Do I stop? Again, I can't draw attention to it. I don't want to draw attention to it. So I went like one more sentence in the corporate prayer and then just jumped right into the closing prayer of confession. I don't know if that was the right thing to do, but that's what I did.
Yeah.
And nobody, you know, waved a red flag in the car. Like, what, you just read that. What do you do? You know, people, they just roll with
it. Yeah. I mean, when it comes to baptism too, I've done some really bonehead moves. There was one time I was baptizing and I just talked about the importance of vows and I went and baptized without having them make them. So somebody goes, they didn't do the vows. I said, are you kidding? Come back up to do the vows.
Wow.
And then I forgot to, there was a big family there and I forgot to baptize one. So, there's numerous things like that along the way.
Yeah.
You know, that happened, but, It's really remarkable. Like, we bring this everlasting gospel. It is the power of God, and that he continues to work through us, you know, even in these weaknesses.
It just proves that it's not about us.
Right.
We're fallen men with feet of clay. It's not about us. God works through. He's chosen this means, the foolishness of preaching, as Paul says, to deliver his gospel, and he will work through fallen, flawed human men.
He may even work through somebody falling asleep and falling out of a window.
Yeah, it happened.
You know, I used to get bothered when I'd see people sleeping in the middle of my sermons. Yeah, I have another good one, or we'll close. And, you know, I started realizing that, you know, God gives his beloved sleep. So if I can bless them with sleep, I don't get worried about it anymore.
That one's never bothered me, because I started out at Moody Bible Institute teaching Bible studies at Pacific Garden Mission. At the time, it was the largest homeless shelter in America. So I was standing in front of, I don't know, 300 homeless guys for 30 minutes. They had no qualms about dozing off. It sounded like chainsaws in that room.
And you knew you were bringing it home, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. And they couldn't have cared less. You know, they're not worried about offending me. So now if someone in the congregation dozes off, that's the least you can do to me. Yeah, I'm not offended
that
one
doesn't,
bit.
Doesn't get me anymore. There's, you know, we have to be patient with the sheep too. Like, there was one guy, you know, he came up early on in ministry and he got in my face. And pastor, when you're praying from the pulpit, you need to fold your hands. I was like, brother, when you're praying from the pew, you need to close your eyes.
That's great. Like,
you know, that really happened, you know? So we do have to be patient with them too. He actually got a kick out of that. But, you know, there's expectations, I think, that are on us for the look, for the, you know, everything. And there's obviously behavioral expectations that are right and appropriate, but there are also other things that are not going to quite match up to people's expectations always. And they have to learn to live with that too.
Right. And I always say, you know, I'm not everybody's cup of tea. That's okay. I'm not offended. I'm sure I'm not my own favorite preacher.
Yeah.
I'm sure other people.
Yeah, we can hardly listen to our sermon.
No, never.
I mean, it's painful.
And I'm sure plenty of people in my congregation like other preachers more than me. I'm not offended.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's not about me.
Yeah. I used to get really agitated early on when, you know, people would leave the church for foolish reasons and they'd run down to another church. I like that preacher better. That was just pride.
Yeah.
Somebody likened it, the whole situation, to a plant, you know, in your windowsill. You know, some people cannot, they just don't have a green thumb, and whatever they do, they cannot make that plant grow. They just don't have it. And they give the plant to their neighbor and the thing flourishes.
Yeah.
That's what we want.
Of course.
Like, ultimately, we want God's people to flourish. And if somebody's really, you know, I did have one guy early on again in ministry come up. I was walking down the street and I ran into him. I said, hey, how you doing today? Well, it's terrible because of you. Well, there's one for the blooper. And I said, brother, if you're that miserable, go ahead. Like, go find a church where you're going to flourish and don't feel this way. Most likely in those situations, it's not the church or the pastor. It's the person. But I mean, I'm with you on that. Our goal, if somebody stops off for a while, our goal is to help them along the way. But if they're going to flourish somewhere else, we're not controlling people. We're not forcing people.
No.
That is the worst environment or spirit you could create. A whole bunch of people who feel forced to be there.
Right. You know? And if God can use somebody else to reach that person, go for it. That's wonderful.
Right.
Yeah. It's not going to offend me.
Right. Right. I mean, we want people to leave for right reasons, people to leave for biblical reasons, and we encourage that. But at the end of the day, you know, we understand in God's providence these things happen.
Yeah.
So, well, I think that was just sort of supposed to be kind of a fun one, so a little lighter than usual. But I hope what it helps with is for any Christians listening to appreciate their pastor, not be too hard on him in his failings. You know, there's a fifth commandment kind of issue there, you know. Be patient with them and bear with them in their failings, for through them, God chooses to rule over you. I love that in the Heidelberg. I think the Heidelberg just nailed that on the fifth commandment about being patient and bearing with them in their failings.
Yeah.
God still is working. God still is ministering his word to you through a weak vessel, a vessel we carry around and, you know, we have in jars of clay.
Right.
You know,
and encouragement to pastors to trust that God will equip your congregation to bear with you. Mm-hmm. Again, our congregation is more forgiving of us than we are of ourselves. So trust your people to love you and to bear with you.
One last thought on that front. You know, it takes time. It just takes time to build trust in a pastor-congregational relationship. Everything today is, you know, we want quick results, fast results. We're sort of conditioned to that in the American church. My experience has been, it takes, this is not a hard, fast rule, but it takes 4 to 5 years for the ministry to really be trusted and received. I'm not saying they're not receiving the word prior to that, but to really, where that pastoral relationship of trust is built,
yeah.
So that even in these failings, they know that man is for us. They know that man loves us. That man cares for us. It takes time for the sheep to develop that trust. In both of my charges, I felt like it's taken at least that. Again, it's not a hard, fast rule. I think ministry runs in cycles. You know, there's honeymoon periods, then the things sort of flatten off and normalize, and you have periods of conflict. But when you weather that conflict, when you weather those conflicts, there are seasons of real growth. There are seasons of real progress. We have to be patient in whatever season it is. There are seasons in the ministry.
Right.
And those seasons are important to consider.
Yeah. And steadfastness and faithfulness is the key.
Exactly.
Trusting God in every circumstance.
Amen. Well, thanks for the thoughts, Dan.
Yeah, thanks.
We appreciate you sharing all your bloopers today.
I have many more.
Next time.